Welcome to On Top of PR with Jason Mudd, presented by ReviewMaxer.
Hello and welcome to On Top of PR. I'm your host, Jason Mudd with Axia Public Relations, and we're pleased to present another episode with you today for On Top of PR. And by the way, this episode is brought to you by Audible, and Audible has a free offer for fans of On Top of PR. If you go to ontopofpr.com/audible, I hope you'll take advantage of their offer and enjoy some free access to Audible. Today, our guest is Mark Mohammadpour. Mark, welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show. Mark is with Chasing the Sun. Mark, we're really glad to have you today.
Jason, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, so Mark is the owner and chief well-being officer at Chasing the Sun. After spending his public relations career as an executive at global agencies and losing 150 pounds over the past decade, look at you, good job, Mark launched his company Chasing the Sun to empower public relations leaders to prioritize their well-being so they can shine in the family room and the boardroom. I love that, Mark. And no wonder we're having you back on the show, because that is exactly the audience we're trying to reach and the audience that we want to help stay on top of PR. So, Mark, here we are today. We're talking about stress in public relations. I want to set the table first to express that you and I were just talking before we pressed record that since at least 2012, a company called CareerCast has named PR manager or PR executive as one of the top 10 most stressful jobs. And obviously that is concerning. Obviously that makes headlines every year. They come out and make this announcement and PR keeps landing in the top 10. So we as an industry, we talk about it. If I'm being candid, we probably talk about it for a day, a week, or a month. Then we seem to forget about it and keep forging ahead, working hard, and probably being very stressed out. The goal of our episode today, Mark, in my mind, and we talked about this earlier to make sure we're on the same page, is to really understand why is PR stressful and how do we help ourselves, our teams, and our organizations improve on this. And just based on your expertise and your smarts, I know that we're going to get into explaining beyond the PR department how to help corporate communications leaders work with the enterprise, the full organization, to improve the level of stress that employees are dealing with. And ultimately, I think, Mark, if you're agreeable, how might we help you start landing into a category of a great place to work? Does that sound good, Mark?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. Well, let's do it. So again, since 2012, this organization named CareerCast makes headlines in the PR industry every year when they basically say PR manager, sometimes they call it PR executive. Let's just go a PR executive today, is one of the top 10 most stressful jobs that you can have. Well, guess what? I work in PR. My agency team works in PR. Many of our clients work in PR, at least work in, marketing type roles. Mark, you used to be in PR and still practice in the industry as well. Why is PR so stressful, Mark?
The obvious answer is because we're in a 24/7 news cycle and things are constantly going on. That's the obvious answer. But let's go a little bit deeper, Jason. Our role is building relationships. That's literally the title of what we do and the definition. And it takes a lot of time. And we have to remind ourselves that as our role as PR professionals is to build relationships with our publics. That's not only the media, that's our clients, that's other stakeholders, that's influencers, that's people that we're engaging with on our social channels. And that takes a considerable amount of time to do so. And we've known this. And obviously there's this saying that it's PR, not ER. And I've respected that for forever. And I understand that to help try to put context around what we do and the importance of what we do. And it's good often to think about that and think day to day the impact that we have and be able to say, look, we're not saving lives. But I do have to say, Jason, and to the audience, there are a number of us that work in a public relations capacity and a public information capacity that are having to craft messages that have to be sent, received, delivered, and executed on by our publics that's saving lives. Whether you're working in a school district, whether you're working at a hospital, think about the COVID era. when I host workshops, Jason, and I ask people, like my public relations friends, did you play a role in sending a message around COVID? 99% of the respondents say yes. That's a very serious role that we've played. That's a stressful role. So while I respect the idea of talking about it's PR, not ER, as a way to say, okay, what we're doing is not really important. In a lot of ways, it is. And it is saving lives. And it is stressful. And it's important to acknowledge that because we are building relationships. It takes time. It takes a lot of brain power. It takes a lot of physical energy as well. And so that's why we have to set the standard, be able to say, this is important. And this is why it's a stressful profession.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think, PR was definitely even more stressful during the pandemic, especially when you not only have the background. Well, I think there's a couple issues here, right? There's the background stress of, am I going to catch this illness that is impacting, you know, so many people? Is my employer or my employment putting me at risk to get infected, right? Am I going to bring that back to my household and how's that going to impact them? And then you're obviously worried about your friends and family and loved ones and their health and wellness as well. So you've got that whole factor playing in. Then you've got the economic crash that occurred corresponding with it. So suddenly you're worried about your job. And most PR people I know, their job expanded. So they went from a lot of PR, as you know, PR is typically broken down into external communications and internal communications. Some organizations are very heavily focused on internal and some are very focused on external and some do both. We as an agency, we focus on external communications, but suddenly our clients were like, hey, can you also help us with internal communications? So we started adopting and adapting and pivoting to kind of help with internal communications, which is generally outside our scope. But given that there was a crisis, we wanted to be helpful and we were. But yes, so suddenly we start doing more internal communications work than we'd ever done in the previous 19 years of our agency in 1 year. And suddenly we're doing crisis communications, announcing, you know, office closures, location closures, service limited availability, pricing issues came later, layoffs, things like that. So, yeah, so I would say definitely the pandemic probably increased that, you know, level of stress significantly. I'm sure there are some positions that might have been less stressful, but I don't want to make that assumption during the pandemic that were typically stressful. And I'm sure there are other positions that rose up even higher that, you know, have suddenly become more stressful. To your point, yes, I don't really, people really don't like to just talk about PR being just a news element, like media relations. There's much more to that, and you know that as well. But not only is there a news cycle that's 24/7, there's a social media cycle that's 24/7. There's the search engines and web content that's 24/7. So I feel like, you know, other professions do a good job of breaking the work up into 24-hour shifts, like nursing and healthcare and things like that. I don't know very many PR people that, you know, work a, 3 to 11 shift or midnight to 7 a.m. shift. Maybe that is a future evolution as we become more and more focused on communications around the clock. Maybe that's a solution. I don't really know. But I think most PR people prefer to work a very typical, you know, 8 to 6, 9 to 5 kind of schedule. But that could be the future as well, is that you've got somebody either at least, you know, more sophisticated organizations will certainly rotate being on call, but maybe there's just a new era where you've got someone who's working these different shifts.
Jason, if the pandemic has showed anything, it's that the opportunity for us to work remotely is possible. This was something that I've done for a long time. It's something that you've done for a long time. So what you're talking about is absolutely an option. We can have an agency team that is global, and you can have your headquarters on the East Coast, and you can have folks in London, you can have folks in India, you can have folks in Tokyo, in Sydney, in Honolulu, and be able to help monitor as needed. And we have the technology, we've had it for a long time, but now we have the culture, the opportunity to be able to help trust people remotely and to be able to do this. This has been a big paradigm shift over the last few years. Again, we've had the technology. Now we have the social proof that this is possible. And so this is opportunity for companies, Jason, to really think about how they are going to staff this going forward. You don't need to have everybody sit in one physical office. You don't need to have everyone sit in one time zone. And in fact, just as you said, the opportunity is going to be there for to distribute this globally, or at least across multiple time zones, so that you're not online from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. It might be from 6 to 4. It might be from 8 to 6, something that is doable, but there's trust around the organization to be able to help pick things up while you are living the rest of your life as you should be.
Yeah, Mark, you're reminding me, I had a position before I started Axia, years ago, where I was actually working in a 24/7 environment. And I remember that, I kind of had figured out from my predecessor that, a good shift to work is 7 a.m. to 4, because if you came in at 7, you could catch the crew that was working overnight, right? And then if you stayed till 4, you could catch the people who were coming in to do, the 3 to 11 or 3 to midnight kind of shift kind of thing. So that was very helpful to me because, to your point, you need to have at a minimum just some FaceTime with them, even if it's, not physically in person anymore. But you need that environment where you can kind of touch your team and you can, or at least interact with them, make sure they feel heard and appreciated and valued, because it can be lonely working nights, right? And so I forgot, in that communications capacity, we did have, that kind of scenario. I also just real quick want to talk about maybe what are some of the other stressors that are in the PR industry. I think I'm quoting CareerCast when I say that stressors like deadlines and client expectations can feel overwhelming at times. It can also be difficult to unwind in today's always-on business world. And so I want to break that down for a minute. Not all of our audience has clients, right, as we typically perceive it, but I think they really do, because you being a head of corporate communications or global communications or strategic communications, corporate comms, whatever you want to call it, public relations, you're going to have different clients at different, divisions of the company, different brands and branches. You're going to have different clients. So, you may have certain things that you have to report up to the CFO. You may have to report certain things to the chief marketing officer, to the maybe you're reporting to or collaborating with the head of HR and the CEO himself. But you're going to have multiple clients, people who are coming to you, maybe they're head of certain products and they're like, hey, we need more PR about this new product we're launching. And then you go out of that meeting and they're like, this is a very high priority, I need you to focus on that. You go out of that meeting and into another meeting with another division, they're like, hey, we're opening up 5 new branches and we need your PR team all over this. And so that can feel overwhelming at time with those client expectations. And, you've got clients throwing deadlines at you without understanding the other deadlines. I think the best way for our entire audience to relate to this is, when you were in high school or college and you had 6 different teachers, none of which are sitting around collaborating saying, well, we've got these deadlines for Jason to meet. What are your deadlines? And let's make it easy on them, right? Everybody is singularly focused on their role, their job, their timeline, their preferences.
Yeah, that's exactly how I talk to college students about the shift from college to professional life. Is you're used to having that one block of time for one class and then 90 minutes and then 2 hours. And when you're professional life, it's like 10 minutes on one subject and 5 minutes on another and 3 on another and 18 on another. And you're right. And this is the opportunity, Jason, as communicators, to make sure that we have a real clear understanding of what the priorities are. And so this is important at every level. This is important for executives who are really helping set their teams up for success and understanding what are the priorities and pushing back. It's up to the middle managers who might be new to becoming people managers and are understanding how to delegate and how to let go of doing the tactical work, at the same time making sure that they're understanding how to manage their clients and their teams. And then at the new professional level, as they're becoming professionals, as they're becoming adults and maturing and getting experience, making sure that they feel empowered to say, oh my gosh, I have 4 deadlines at 9 a.m. every Friday. How am I going to do all this? And empower them to go to their manager, who may not know all the deadlines that's going on, and be able to say, okay, these are what's happening. What are the priorities? How should I stagger this? And it comes from an area of vulnerability, Jason. This is really one of the solutions is being more vulnerable. And it's being acknowledging, be able to say, this is a lot, and be able to say, okay, this is what's important. And acknowledging that this is key.
Yeah, Mark, you're absolutely right. I would just add to for that person listening here that may need to come to a supervisor Or maybe it's a high-ranking executive in the organization. Say, here's all the things that are on my plate. Help me prioritize these, or understand that we can't do all of them, so we need to cut back or whatever. Two thoughts come to mind. A lot of organizations I see have what I call a lot of activity, but no strategy. And if they had a strategy, they could start to eliminate all the activities or some of the activities, or at least start to prioritize them. And people tell, well, there's not enough time to come up with a strategy. Well, that's the problem, right? You haven't prioritized a strategy. Second thing I would say, Mark, is it seems really important in my experience that you come early and perhaps often to have those kind of prioritization sets, sessions. So to the younger, the more entry-level professionals, I'm always, you know, mindful of saying, you know, hey, if you find that you can't meet a deadline or a commitment you've made, you need to raise your hand early, right? Don't wait till the day of, the day before, a week before. You know, start looking a month ahead of time or weeks ahead of time, if at all possible, and start kind of balancing out that workload so that you understand.
Mark, and that's okay. Yeah. And that's okay, because this is all about building trust with our teams, right? And it's trusting our new professionals and the people to be able to say, you're an employee, I'm going to trust you to be a professional, and raise your hand if you can't do it. We're going to find a solution.
Yeah. So Mark, we're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to come back, and we're going to be singularly focused on solutions to how do we solve and make the PR profession less stressful than it is today. So with that, we'll be right back on the other side.
You're listening to On Top of PR with your host, Jason Mudd. Jason is a trusted advisor to some of America's most admired and fastest growing brands. He is the managing partner at Axia Public Relations, a PR agency that guides news, social, and web strategies for national companies. And now, back to the show.
Hello and welcome back to On Top of PR. We want to say thanks to our sponsor, ReviewMaxer, as well as Audible. Thank you for your support. If you're interested in learning more about either one of those organizations, please be sure to check out ontopofpr.com/ReviewMaxer or ontopofpr.com/Audible. Back to Mark. Mark, we promised the audience that we would focus the second half of our episode today on solutions. And we've got some that we're going to talk through here. But let me just start with this, Mark. When we're thinking about our organizations, you know, let's say I'm the head of corporate communications for a brand or an enterprise. Should I start looking at how can I help my own department, use less stress or become less stressed, since PR is one of the top 10 most stressful positions? Or should I be thinking more globally and throughout the whole enterprise of how might the company make employment with the company less stressful?
It's a great question. The role of the corporate communicator has grown significantly over the last few years. We have seen the opportunities within that department, primarily as we think about employee communications, internal communications, executive communications, to be able to talk about everything that's been going on, everything from the pandemic to remote work. And we have seen so much growth in the respect of the internal communicator. I think that's only going to grow. As we think about what it looks like going forward, we always like starting small and with the opportunity to scale. And so for my in-house friends, or even my agency friends, and thinking about your own department and thinking about what are some of the ways that we can reduce stress and design pilot programs. One of the things that we want to talk about, though, Jason, is that over the last few years, we have seen an increase in the number of well-being benefits. Everything from gym memberships to meditation apps, therapy, all of these are great and have really good intentions. I think the opportunity for us is to think a little bit bigger picture in identifying some of the main issues and challenges with stress, and be able to identify what are the particular solutions within that particular team to be able to help solve the problem. Because no two companies are ever the same. No two teams are ever the same. And how we need to look at some of the root challenges of how we're going to be able to solve this. So that's everything from how we're taking time off to prioritization to what are our core hours, why meetings seem to be scheduled. All these things add up to a stressful day. And the more that teams can analyze this for themselves and identify some of the changes that they can make and see some of the results, then they'll be able to help talk to the executives and be able to help scale it out broadly.
You know, you mentioned meetings, and that was a trigger to me. At some point, you know, as a team, we started talking about meetings. And, you know, we've always historically been really good about minimizing the number of meetings, but we still felt like that we were doing spending a lot of time in meetings. So one hack that we had was we just looked at every meeting we do in the company, and we said, for a month, let's cut those reoccurring meeting time slots in half. So if you had an hour meeting, now it's a half an hour. If you had a 90-minute meeting, now it's 45 minutes. And the feedback was phenomenal. And, you know, when you have a short meeting, people are very focused. And by the way, people can't get a lot of work done when they're sitting in a meeting. We have clients, you know, people who work at companies where they're not only booked from the beginning of the day to the end of the day in back-to-back meetings, they also are being asked to attend multiple meetings at the same time. And so there may be a project they're working on that meets weekly, and they can only make that meeting once every 3 weeks. Well, clearly, they're not able to stay up to date on that. We see a lot of our clients, unfortunately, who are meetings all day, go home, put the kids to bed, go to sports activities or family activities. Then they're checking their email to catch up on their email. And then at some point during these sleeping hours, they're actually doing work. And that is not the ideal scenario. And so how do we help these people unwind in an always-on business world today?
So a few things. First of all, just to follow up on the meeting stuff, I really want to challenge people also to think about reducing all those status meetings where everybody goes around and gives an update what's going on. I want to spend time in the room making decisions based on information that we already have. And so one of the things I talk to people about is to design a pre-read where you're sending out all the information ahead of time, give people on their own time to review. And then there's a very clear understanding of how we're going to spend that 15 minutes, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, like you said, Jason, and be able to be very tight as far as how we're going to, you know, how we're going to spend that time. I think part of it also is understanding that because a lot of us are at home all the time, how can we ramp up and ramp down our day? And one of the things I talk about is designing your own fake commute. The Germans have a word called Feierabend that basically means fake commute. And it's this idea that typically when we wake up at 6 a.m, whatever, and we're immediately on email. And then we're just constantly on and on and on until we go to bed at night. And so what I wanted to talk to people about, Jason, is let's make that first half hour, 45, 60 minutes, just focused on you. No phones, and then at 8 o'clock or whatever you start your day, and then at 5, 6 o'clock it's the same thing, and you're winding down. And so you're creating that commute that before we would be walking to work or taking mass transit or driving, and now we're having to create that for ourselves. And so that to me is one way to help separate our work and our personal time, especially when we're at home. It's really important.
Mark, I completely agree that kind of that downtime is really important. And while some of our audience is no longer commuting, you know, depending on when this episode airs, you know, people are starting to come back into the offices as well. And so they take that time. So for me, my commute historically used to be about 45 minutes one way. And so I would listen to a lot of podcasts, audiobooks, make a lot of phone calls. It was a very productive time for me, you know, whether that was personal or professional. And actually, during the pandemic, I started missing that time, right? I wasn't listening to podcasts as much, and I wasn't, you know, doing audiobooks and listening to sports radio and things like that that I'm really personally passionate about that, you know, would keep me energized and motivated. But what I've done instead, Mark, is I fell in love with other things like a 45-minute walk every morning. I get up in the morning and I journal or I outline my day and my goals, and I don't even look at my email or get in front of my computer until later in the day, so I have time to work on big picture things. So, you know, we're all familiar with Ivy Lee or Lee Ivy. I can't remember which one it is ever, but you know, he came up with the idea of you kind of figure out, you know, your 3 to 5 must do's every day. And so I try to do one of those must do's before I even touch my email, preferably before I even touch one of my computer. So that may mean just writing out something, you know, by hand, just to keep that technology time down. And then I've gotten to a point where there's no phone in my bedroom anymore. You know, and I keep that in the other room and things like that. My biggest challenge there was an alarm clock, right? What do I use for an alarm clock? And so I had to kind of go back in time and get an old fashioned type alarm clock kind of thing. But I think that's really important. And I really appreciate you sharing that. Let's see. What else did we want to talk about today? I know that we want to talk about the employers need to consider the questions employees are asking themselves. And I think that's really important for our audience to be thinking about. And they're probably thinking, asking these same things too, right? As important, they're, you know, we don't want to forget that leaders in an organization are often also employees of that same organization.
Absolutely. We've seen this over the last few years. And I was back to what I was talking about a few minutes ago. Obviously, we're seeing a lot of companies provide benefits for their employees around physical health, mental health. And we're seeing this grow and grow and grow. And everything from making sure that employees have time for volunteerism, because volunteering is good for our well-being, our career well-being. Making sure that our employer is thinking about the future of our career, making sure that we have a good opportunity from a social aspect, especially if we are working remotely. From a financial well-being perspective, and seeing more and more companies looking to bring in resources to help their employees save money and invest appropriately. All of these areas, Jason, talk about what I consider to be more a broader well-being. And I think it's important. And the opportunity is to think about the employee experience. And because we're seeing employees really ask themselves, how is my life positively impacted at this company? What's the relationship like? You know, why is it that people are staying? And what's being impacted there? And what are those variables? And that's everything from money to title to role. And then obviously it's about their immediate manager and how much do they perceive that they care about them as an employee in all facets. So the opportunity, Jason, for, you know, agencies and in-house departments is to really play a role in helping to strategize and work with the HR teams to strategize, execute, and communicate a well-being program for their employees. And I think the biggest reason why this is key is we think about the future of this profession, which I love this, the PR profession. And we were talking about this earlier about, obviously it's not just media relations, it's internal communications and the role of the internal communicator, the employee communicator to help play a role in the business impact of retaining employees and helping them grow is huge. And we are uniquely positioned with our experience to be able to help create research and identify trends and speak to our employees and be able to design and execute programs that are going to benefit the business. And that's really what we do day in and day out, is do whatever we can to be able to show business value. So the huge opportunity, going back to what we're talking about a few minutes, to pilot programs if you're an in-house team with your own department and work with your HR teams to be able to help scale a broader well-being program across your enterprise, it's huge. And this isn't necessarily about adding on new benefits. A lot of this is around communicating the benefits that you already have. A lot of discussion about, I've seen recent articles around a lot of companies that offer a lot of different benefits, but their employees aren't using them. And a lot of this opportunity to talk about why that is. Is it awareness? Is it communication? Is it the fact that do employees really want this? This gets to the heart, Jason, of what we do, is to be able to help build relationships and identify based on research, whether it's quantifiable and qualifiable, to be able to design programs. And I think we in our industry are uniquely positioned to play a role here in well-being and the employee experience.
You know, it's funny because I had already written down earlier in our conversation that I need to remind people that we offer things like gym memberships and, you know, perhaps not officially, but very easily, we could also turn that into offering wellness and mindfulness apps and things like that that are, you know, a better fit for the individuals in our organization kind of thing. So, you know, because some people just are never going to go to a gym, but we let them use it for, you know, yoga classes or running a 5K, or if need be, just purchasing, you know, athletic equipment, or, you know, as simple as running shoes or something like that. So I think that's really good and a good reminder. Also, just for our episode notes, we'll be sure to put these three questions in there that you mentioned earlier. But I just want to restate them, because if I were listening to this episode, I know I would want to write them down. You don't have to write them down because they'll be in the episode notes where you can just copy and paste them. But we've got, you know, how is my life positively impacted because I work for this company, right? That's a question that your employees are asking, whether they're asking it to themselves or asking you out loud. Why will people leave jobs for a lower salary or stay at a lower salary, right? And so you need to be thinking about that as well. I know I personally left a job once to go take a job for less money because the job I was at was stressful and I never felt heard by management or leadership. And so I just moved to where I felt like I'd be more valued, even if it meant taking a little bit of a pay cut because the money they were offering wasn't worth it to me. Does my immediate manager care about me as an employee? And probably more importantly, does my immediate manager care about me as an individual, right? Not just as a worker for the organization. So I think those are three questions that I would challenge our audience to look at. Who reports to me? Who am I responsible for? Who do I supervise? Maybe even who just do I collaborate with regularly? And if I don't know, maybe just kind of in some ways kind of guess what their answers might be. Maybe even have a conversation with them about those questions and maybe even coach through that. Because what I've learned as a manager is when you understand through doing a personal professional development plan for each of your employees, you're going to hear what their goals and aspirations are, and you're going to be able to help them create a path to get there. In fact, that's something we were working on just this week internally. But also your employees are really going to appreciate that you listen to them, you hear them, and you become mindful and listening for the opportunities. So for example, we just kind of reorganized a couple of people on our team, and it's because we heard where they want to be in 3 to 5 years from now. And so where they have those passions, I want to unlock those and free them to explore those passions. And it started to fall into place perfectly that we should put this person on this account. We should put this person working on these types of projects. And I'm a big believer, always have been, Mark, in you find what people are naturally motivated by or personally motivated by, and you get rid of the stuff that prevents them from, you know, doing their best and being their best. And that's always worked well for me.
Like the opportunity to create new roles and opportunities for the people that are advocates of the brand, advocates in the company, and there's going to be a mutual benefit. And I think it's just a huge opportunity for us as communicators to be able, you know, to do all this. You mentioned that we talk about the manager, and I think that's one of the important things, you know, if we were to close out on this topic, is we can have all the executives in the world do incredible work as far as showing that they are prioritizing their well-being, that they are taking vacation, that they are setting boundaries and all that. And they're on LinkedIn, all their socials, and they're showing it and they're really doing it. But Jason, let's say that you're my manager and I'm reporting to you and you're not following that executive's lead and you are checking emails on vacation and you're up late and all of those kind of traditional things that impact work-life balance, am I going to follow that executive's lead or am I going to follow your lead, the one who's going to be the biggest advocate for me, the one that's going to push for promotion and bonuses and all of those things? Who am I going to follow? And I think that's the big opportunity for us as we think about employee well-being, is that middle manager and all the changes that are going on in their life, and how can we empower them to make sure that they are making as fluid a transition as possible, because it's going to impact their teams, new professionals, and ultimately the business at large.
Well, this episode was great, Mark. I appreciate all you've said. I want to just kind of touch on two things as we wrap up. Number one is, if you have the privilege and the responsibility of supervising others, I think we've challenged you here to, there's some clear to-dos and action steps that you might take. If you're in, whether or not you have the privilege and responsibility of supervising others, again, whether you do or you don't, there are questions and challenges I think we threw out here to yourself, you know, as an individual. You know, are you setting the right example? Are you prioritizing yourself and your own wellness? Because you really hit the nail on the head. When I go on vacation, I'm somebody who loves to go on vacation. When I go on vacation with others, they're working. You know, they're sneaking off and checking email, or they're checking in a little bit. They're taking a phone call or whatever. And to me, that's not vacation, right? And so I think we have to look at making sure we're setting the right boundaries, because I come back from vacation when I do it right, and I don't always do it right, but I'm recharged and motivated, right? And I think there's nothing worse than setting aside a trip or time with family where you're not fully immersed in that and work is lingering in the back of your mind. And the best way to let work not linger in the back of your mind is to, in my experience, release it and not come back to it and check in and then be like stressing and thinking about it subconsciously. Because even though your employer might be paying you to take time off, they're not paying you to work. They're paying you to take time off. And we have very generous paid time off policies at our company. But I know for sure, and I made a note, there are some people who just aren't using it enough. And I need to follow up with them and say, hey, you didn't take one vacation this summer. Let's find time for you to take vacation. Even if it's a staycation, I just don't want you to work. You know, I want you to take time off because I believe in creativity. I believe that people will come back energized and they'll be more loyal employees because you are looking out for their best interests. Do I have any of that wrong, Mark? What would you do differently?
100%. This is a huge opportunity for us. There's a lot of data that Americans don't take all of our pay time off. U.S. Travel Association said last year that the average American left a full work week on the table. And there's so many reasons why. We can't probably get into it other than it's a mindset issue and it's a communication issue. And the more that we can ensure that our employees are taking time off and that they feel empowered to do so, the better.
Okay, so I'm going to just say this back to make sure I heard you right. So not only thematically speaking, Americans get less vacation time than other countries do, you're also telling me we're still leaving some of that on the table?
100%. Yep.
I don't understand. And so I want to encourage everybody, take more vacation. Tell them that Jason Mudd said you could. No, really. I mean, Suzanne and I were talking earlier. Suzanne's our producer. We were talking earlier about how I love to go on vacation. And I set certain vacation aspirations and goals every year. Not everybody in my family is aspirational about travel as I am. And so I find I'm often having to look for others, you know, friends, family, et cetera, colleagues that I enjoy spending time with and saying, hey, let's find a way to do more trips and things together because I'm very adventurous in that way. So, Mark, this was fabulous. Let's end on a quick thing. Do you have a ritual, like an annual vacation you always do or a vacation you're aspiring to do or somewhere you recommend people go?
Wow, that's a really good question. My wife and I are talking about going back to Europe. It's been a few years. We were last there in 2019 for the Women's World Cup in France. And so we're looking to go back there. I always take a vacation, whether it's an actual physical vacation or a staycation around the Men's and Women's World Cup. The Men's World Cup is obviously in Qatar. It's going to start Thanksgiving week. I'm going to be at home watching that. So that's going to be a staycation for me. So that's something that I always focus on. But here in Portland, Oregon, on the West Coast, there are lots of beautiful areas around here, kind of up and down the Oregon coast. And that's always a go-to for me.
Very nice. Very nice. I keep a bucket list of all the places I want to vacation. The other thing I'm trying to get to is in a point in my career where I can take 8 one-week vacations completely disconnected from work every year. And some years I get closer than others, you know, just depending on workload and how well I plan for it. But the new thing I'm thinking about is like, honestly, you know, maybe not once a month, but at least once a quarter, literally leaving work at Thursday at 5, going to the airport, flying somewhere and coming back Sunday afternoon and just doing like little trips like that because I get very energized from things like that. And so with that, I hope our audience feels the same way and that we've challenged them of things they can be doing in their role at work and also challenge them to find opportunities outside of work, even if it's just going for that daily walk in the park, on the beach, wherever you might be. The daily walk definitely motivates, energizes me and clears my head and helps me prioritize. So Mark, thanks again for sharing your thoughts with our audience. With that, we're going to exit out for another great episode of On Top of PR. And if you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to think of a colleague or friend who would also benefit from it. They'll thank you. We thank you. And they'll be very pleased that they were able to learn more about how they might reduce stress in the very stressful position of being a public relations, corporate communications executive. Thank you very much for tuning in to On Top of PR. And we wish you much success. And honestly, I hope something great happens to you today. Be well.
This has been On Top of PR with Jason Mudd, presented by ReviewMaxer. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode and check out past shows at ontopofpr.com.